Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Cher Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here and we'll be right back. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
How was your weekend?
It was very good. And yours?
Mine was great.
Yes.
I had a big day on Saturday.
Huh?
I had a big day on Saturday.
Yes. Fifth annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk, which was fun and wildly successful beyond our imagination and dreams.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, so for those who haven't heard, we had a goal of raising $100,000 for Africa at our bridge walk, and we brought in on the day of the walk $75,000. As you very well know.
Yes.
And since there are people all over the country doing events to support that that goal, we fully expect to reach our $100,000 mark. So we're very, very happy and excited.
Yes.
And in fact, this afternoon I was just writing a little extra paragraph on the email that's coming out to tell everybody about the day and how fun it was, and you know, those of us who were there and those of us who weren't there, I'm going to add on a little paragraph inviting people to our celebration on is it November 1st?
November 1st, Wednesday, November 1st.
Yeah, our annual celebration. So Jen, who is the Africa coordinator, and I will be leaving the end of this week for Cantalumba for Ndola, Zambia. We'll be over there for a week for me and a couple of weeks for Jen, and be back around the middle of October, and then on November 1st we'll invite everybody to come to a very special thank you event where there'll be food and music by Karen Drucker and a new video talking about the work, showing the work that we're doing currently in Zambia, in Cantalumba compound, and like that. So, you know, we're just nonstop fun here.
Nonstop fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to that event.
I am too.
I look forward to the bridge walk also.
I know. And, you know, people could say, I remember years ago I went on a backpacking trip with a friend who is a Zen monk, and somebody asked him, what does backpacking have to do with Zen? And he said, well, I suppose you could say nothing, but they're both really great things to do. They're both really fun. You know, and that's if people could say, well, you know, what is all of this stuff? What is all of this? Of course, I think people understand what is fundraising to feed children who are starving. I think that's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
But you know, what is these gatherings and music and food and videos, and what does that have to do with spiritual practice that should be, you know, serious? And of course, we're very serious about the good time that awareness practice is, and it's great in practice always to have something that we're doing, something that we're participating in, something that is fun and takes our attention away from where egocentric karmic conditioning wants it to be focused on suffering.
Yes.
So it's good always to have a workshop, a retreat, a you know, a radio show to call in on, you know, or a gathering event, something that the Sangha is putting together so that we can be there in that atmosphere and remember that what the Buddha actually taught was ending suffering.
Yes.
And that's what this path is about. And another way of talking about ending suffering is realizing that life is a really good time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that participation takes, you know, the time and energy away from something wrong and not enough.
Yes. Yeah. And those are really our two choices.
Yes.
It's doing something that we're enjoying, that we're inspired by, that we feel good about, then our attention is going to be drawn to something wrong and not enough. That's what conditioning, that's what karma does. It puts all of its energy into taking us out of the moment and into a conversation about and for suffering. So what we're doing is learning to take our attention away from that, bring it back here to the moment, and focus on who we are and what life actually is and what the possibilities are for a human being in a human form. Because that's it's a very big opportunity to be a human being, to be in a human incarnation.
Yeah.
And to be fully present to that is absolutely glorious.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we have a caller.
All right. Wonder what glorious aspect of life this person would like to talk about.
I'd like to welcome William from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, William.
Hi, Sherry.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I wish you kind of set me up to try and speak about something glorious, and I'm actually calling back in, you know, to check in from our last conversation. And
well, now, you see, people would quickly leap to the conclusion that being aware of suffering and working through it is not glorious. I think it's one of the most glorious activities that a human being can participate in.
That's actually wonderfully supportive to hear.
Yeah.
Wonderfully supportive. Well, then that's what I'm working hard on this one.
Uh huh. So remind us about your homework assignment.
Well, I spoke with you more in depth about some content with my family of origin and how I've fallen back into a meshment. Blurred boundaries. It's focused a lot around a business project that my younger brother is initiating, and I have kind of allowed myself to get drawn into and participate in. And I was talking at length last time about it, and I guess there were a couple comments you had made about sort of the relationship with my family, obviously being a very challenging one for me to try and, you know, break from my karma, involved with them, and, you know, the addictive nature of it, which I see. And then you mentioned, because we were running out of time, that I should think of a schedule of what I was going to, how much time I would spend with them,
mm-hmm.
just for the next month.
Mm-hmm. Because it's addictive.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not just, well, this is my family and blah, 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 whatever we've got going about our family. When it's that kind of karmic suffering arrangement, it's also addictive. If it weren't, it wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you how this has unfolded. Actually, kind of working with your idea and also I think where I was sort of headed, you know, as well, was essentially establishing some boundaries, some limits.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, time is one of those, but also just kind of, because the boundaries are so blurred, I've tried to work on being clear in my head of what I need for me to take care of me.
Uh-huh.
And what I have come up with at this point, and, you know, with the support of the therapist that I've worked with as well, is that it's actually kind of, I'll try and keep it simple. It's a little complex because it's about this business project. But I am wanting to establish that in order for me to participate at all anymore in this project, I have to be clear about certain boundaries and what the expectations will be and so forth. So I'm actually...
As we would do with anyone who with whom we didn't have this kind of karmic relationship.
Right. Right?
If you and I were going to go into business together, we would make agreements, contracts. We would
Right.
we would probably have somebody kind of official look them over, and then we would sign them so that we both understood exactly what was expected of us and what our limits were and all of those kinds of things, yeah? But when we do this in a karmic relationship, all of that starts getting very murky.
Right.
Yeah? Okay.
Plus, I mean, I guess the one thing I notice, it's hard, I guess, because maybe I'm so identified with the little kid part of me when I'm around my family that I guess the one thing I notice is that having grown up in that family, which has never been adept at establishing boundaries, that I kind of realized that's a skill I don't have and that my family doesn't have.
Right.
And going into this, it's actually lots of anxiety because I'm basically kind of approaching in a way the family doesn't do it. You know, they don't do it this way.
Well, and it's not an accident, is it? A lot of families don't have boundaries. That's a huge part of the way the dysfunction is maintained.
Right.
So, you know, when we go out into the world with other people, we have to conduct ourselves in certain ways. But we don't have to do that with family. We when we're with friends or coworkers or that sort of thing, we're expected to maintain a certain amount, a certain level of civility and politeness and concern and that sort of thing. But with family, we don't have to do that. So it's almost permission. Well, it is in many cases. It's not only permission, it's encouragement to come from the very worst in ourselves.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Does that seem true for you?
To come from the worst when I'm interacting with my family, you're saying.
Yes. That's often what the family dynamic is.
Yeah.
That we push one another's buttons, that we relate to one another from old places, from kind of inside information. We use things against one another. We sabotage. Things that we would never be encouraged or allowed to do with anyone who hadn't reached with us a certain intimacy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then when people cross that line into greater intimacy, very often what that means is now we'll act toward one another the way I learned to act with my family.
This kind of brings up a couple questions that I've had. One is, let's see, I'm a little confused here. I guess the first one I'll go to is, last time you asked me if I had similar experiences elsewhere, and I did mention, you know, some job relationships, or you know, it seems like I somehow get in. I see a pattern of getting into situations where this sort of blurred boundaries can happen even outside the family. So that's...
Absolutely.
That's... I mean, is there any sense that in my practicing establishing these boundaries with my family that will help me to not repeat this in the outside world?
Well, now, this, you know, the establishing boundaries is a therapeutic, a psychotherapeutic model.
Right.
I don't particularly value that. It can be a good exercise, but beyond that, I personally don't find it useful. I would actually say it's counterproductive. What we're going for is to be operating out of center, not trading one set of personality traits and behaviors for another.
Right.
So over here, I have no boundaries. Over there, I have rigid boundaries. Well, that doesn't do anything except, I compulsively overeat, I compulsively undereat. In both situations, I'm not free on the subject of food.
Right.
I'm not coming from a centered place. So, for me, that's where we're headed. I want to be centered when I'm with my family, when I'm with coworkers, when I'm in friendship or intimate romantic relationships. I want to be coming from center.
And from a place of being centered, you also may have boundaries, but they're not...
Well, technically, there is no one to have boundaries from center.
Hmm.
There's only center. So you see, the difficulty with this, and not to, confuse the two processes that you're looking at, but that is one of the big differences between the psychotherapeutic model and Zen awareness practice. The one is supportive of an ego. The other is dissolving an ego. So there are only difficulties with boundaries or lack of boundaries with an ego as long as you have an ego.
Hmm.
As we let go of that, the whole issue falls away. So from center, there is simply being present, finding the place that's most compassionate to all. Not what's best for me in the situation, what's best for all in the situation. So I often talk about it as, we we can go on one of two sides of the duality. Either I want the whole table and all the chairs for me, or I set the table for everybody else and leave me out. And what we're going for is, there's the table, there are the chairs, and we all have a place.
Hmm. How do I know? This is, I guess, I've become familiar with your work just this past year and have been beginning a practice that, is with what limited exposure I've already had. And sometimes I have this sense that I'm not sure if I've ever experienced center.
Well, now that's a trick. Of course you've experienced center, because center is who you are. Has I ever experienced center? No, because I, that ego that we're talking about, is the illusion of being separate from center.
Mm.
So, has the ego ever been centered? No. Does the ego exist within center? Yes. But the ego believes itself to be separate from center. So the work is to see how egocentric karmic conditioning operates, to realize that the way we can observe that is from awareness, and to practice coming back to awareness so that we can watch how egocentric karmic conditioning does what it does and how what it does results in suffering. So this is why our practice is meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So we practice sitting down, sitting still, turning our attention inward, focusing on the breath, and just noticing everything that happens. And in that noticing, we begin to realize that there's a distance between the awareness with which the observation happens and what is observed. And we begin to sense how here I am, and that my sense of myself is that I, and this has to be in quotes, I am awareness aware. I am awareness observing everything that's going on. And then, poof, unconsciousness happens. Suddenly I'm over here. I'm a little ego. I'm in survival. If somebody said center, I wouldn't know what was being talked about. I'm not observing anything. I'm in a conversation in my head. I'm believing all of the stories. And then as we practice more, we realize, wait a minute. I'm caught in a story. I'm believing the voices in my head. And in that moment of, wait a minute, I've already disidentified. I've already stepped back into center. Now, I, once again in quotes, the way I experience myself is as conscious, compassionate awareness, noticing everything that's going on. And we're just learning to see how we move back and forth between ego identification and center. Back out in ego, lost in the conversation, believing the stories, back at center, observing it all.
Okay. I guess intellectually, I've been grasping that experientially, maybe a little bit with the meditation, you know, the idea that I can get away from it, you know, for a split second, mm-hmm. and then I'm back in it.
Mm-hmm.
How?
Here's the deal, William.
Okay.
You'll never solve the problems within identification. We can't come up with a plan. We can't find a strategy. We can't figure out how to be and what to do, how to act so that we will have the experience that all of that is happening in conditioning. Mm-hmm. Our only hope is to step out of all of that, to let it just be as it is, turn the attention away, come back to center, and be all right.
Okay, that's very, I guess maybe it's my ego that still wants to know what to do with my family.
Yes,
but ego does.
Ego wants to know what to do because that's what keeps ego at the center of the universe. It's embroiled in this drama, oh my God, what about this, what about that? The emotions are there, the conversation, it's all real, it's all believable, and what we're learning to do is have that be a flag, and we drop it, and we turn our attention back to the breath, and we just take a nice, long, conscious breath and realize there's no problem. My current favorite T-shirt moment happened at a retreat last week in which I heard it said, no past, no future, no problem.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. It's coming out as a Keep It Simple T-shirt with the little monk. you might get one.
That sounds like a good. I might have to actually write it on my hand. So if I'm aware of it,
that's right. There you go.
I'd have to look in a mirror a lot then to see it.
Yeah. Okay. So keep practicing and keep letting us know.
Okay. I will.
All right. Thanks.
Can I ask one last thing?
Sure.
The last time we spoke, I had also mentioned kind of how I had had a fear, like this reaction, especially when I'm identified with the little kid, I guess, of this kind of fear of other people's reactions. And you had mentioned that, you asked me if I realized that I'm not really afraid of other people. I'm afraid of, I guess, the critical voice in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just had asked for a little more explanation of that, because sometimes I imagine, I feel like the little kid who, when someone gets upset, it's like I revert back to the little kid who, was picked up by his hair by a sixth grade teacher when he was in fourth grade and tossed down the hall, or a nun who, broke a pointer across my desk and in a rageful moment. And it feels like my safety, I really feel unsafe almost. But I guess I also maybe, is the critical voice also saying that I must be bad? Is that?
Well, it's that you go to that little kid place. That's a process that you do.
Right.
When you no longer react that way, when you stay at center, it won't matter what other people are doing.
Right, right.
So the point of that is that it's all internal. And what all of that means goes on in you. You see, so somebody starts screaming, and you just bail out and leave a little 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 9-year-old, whatever it is, there. That aspect of the personality who is traumatized like that. But it's not, the problem is not that the person is screaming. The problem is what you're doing with that.
Right, right.
Yeah. If you didn't have that going on, as I say, you would just kind of look at the person and say, "Wow, you're having a bad day."
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but they wouldn't be scary because you're a grown man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I guess, again, that's a moment to come back to the breath.
We come back to the breath. And the next stage of it is, of course, you learn, as we talked about a couple of times ago, you learn to be, to that little scared child, the mentoring, conscious, compassionate adult presence that he didn't have when he was young.
Right. Yeah, I have been working on talking to myself from that place, and
yeah,
it's getting a little bit better.
Yeah, because when you are that conscious, compassionate, mentoring presence, he doesn't have to be there. He doesn't have to react or be afraid. And from that present place, you're not afraid.
Right.
There is no problem.
Okay.
I know. It can either be overwhelming and daunting or really fun and exciting. And I'm going to encourage you to go with choice two.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. It's been so the other way for so long.
Yep.
Well, my whole life.
Yep.
And now
it's like, what are those puzzles, those number puzzles that people are so obsessed with?
Sudoku or something?
Yeah. Something. Yeah. So it's like that. You know, if people saw those as terrifying and overwhelming and, the fact that they can't see the solution really says something about, they wouldn't be popular. But people see them as a puzzle to be solved, and so it's really fun and interesting and exciting. You feel good when you see something, you get the right one, and pretty soon you've solved the whole puzzle, and it's really great. That's the way we want to approach awareness practice, which we do from center, and which we don't when we're identified with egocentric karmic conditioning.
Well, I will keep practicing.
All right, good man.
Thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, William. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break for a couple minutes now, and then we'll be right back. Next on Open Air, in our second half of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. I'd like to welcome Caroline from Denver. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi there.
I am calling to report my own insanity.
All right.
Because it seemed better to report it than just to keep it to myself.
Uh-huh. It's always good to blow the whistle on egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yes, it is.
And it's always good not to take ownership of egocentric karmic conditioning.
Ah. Well, then I'm calling to report someone else's insanity.
There you go. There you go. You're calling to report how really insane conditioning can get.
Yes, but I think it might actually be a subpersonality.
Hmm. Okay, well, then in that case, we're going to hear a little projection from whoever has decided that somebody else is insane.
All right. Well, I'm confused already, so I'll just say what the situation is.
All right.
The situation is that I live in recovery from an eating disorder.
Uh-huh.
And that my relationship with food has been pretty healthy, much improved, very clean, I like to call it, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But awareness practice has led me to look at my relationship with coffee.
Hmm.
And what I'm realizing is that I have brought my compulsion that used to be for food over to coffee.
Uh-huh.
So I, or maybe I should say this subpersonality, I call her Coffee Girl. She has to have her 3 cups of coffee a day.
Uh-huh.
It's like an obsession. And if she can't get it, you know, it's a big deal.
Uh-huh.
So it's like an addiction to anything.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Does she have to have triple shots of espresso?
No.
No? Well, how does she like her coffee?
She likes just regular coffee with some skim milk.
Oh, my gosh, she is a sinner, isn't she? Okay. And does she have to have a pot at a time with these three occasions, or is it just a cup?
It's the biggest cup you could imagine.
Uh-huh.
It's a big mug.
Big old mug of coffee.
Yeah, and like right now I'm staying up in a mountain condo that I've rented. I had to go out and buy a mug because their mugs weren't big enough.
Uh-huh. Okay. And does this seem to be having any ill effects? You know, is it detrimental to your health in any way?
90% of the time, no.
Okay.
But if I'm like on a road trip or maybe visiting a friend who doesn't have coffee or something, then it can become like this all day obsession, this thing that sours my mood.
Mm-hmm.
One day on a vacation, I was just nasty to my husband all day.
Uh-huh.
So that.
But he wouldn't let you have coffee?
Well, we were in the state of Maine, which you think would have coffee.
I was just there.
There was none to be found. That's what I said, too.
Yeah, well, that is a conspiracy. I was just there recently, and actually I found some, so I could give you some tips.
Oh.
You have to go back there. All right. Now, you remember when I said we're going to hear some projections from somebody who has some attitudes and wants to label and name call somebody else. Do you remember when I said that?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So the person who is most interesting to me is not the person who has been identified as obsessive, but the person who has a problem with it.
Okay. Well,
because now let's step back and look at this, okay? Here is somebody who had, it sounds like, a pretty serious problem with food.
Yes.
And she did a lot of work. And she is to a place now where her relationship with food is healthy.
Yes.
Okay? And so now somebody is saying, yeah, but that doesn't really count. Because I've decided that the way you are about coffee is not okay.
Yes, now, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I wonder what would happen if that attitude had turned toward cleaning house. Would anybody think it was a problem?
I don't know. That's hard for me to imagine.
Paying bills on time, or being clean and tidy, or like that. Do you think somebody would, being really focused on doing a good job at whatever she does? Do you think the finger pointing would happen as quickly?
Well, there is some finger pointing that goes on about my house cleaning.
Yeah, it's not up to standards.
Right.
Yeah. So what I'm going to encourage you to look at is the possibility that the real problem is the one who's going around pointing out problems.
Well, let me say something more about the situation.
Okay.
Because I think I'm coming at it from a different place because I look at, like, this freedom that I have with my food now, what feels like freedom and maturity and good self-care and nurturance, and it feels so good to not, you know, to maybe have a dessert once in a while, but it's not an obsession.
Mm-hmm.
And so I notice that I would like, it's not that coffee is a bad thing. I don't think I'm labeling coffee as a bad thing. It's that someone, like, I'll write in my journal in the morning, and I'll look at this freedom from, and I'll say, I want to have that freedom from coffee, too. Not that I can't have coffee, not that I can't enjoy a cup, but just freedom from this rigidity that I have to drop everything. Or I might have this anxiety if I don't have my 10 a.m. coffee.
Okay.
It's freedom from that I seek. And what happens is I write in my journal. I can feel in my body how good that liberation would feel. And then my behavior is that I go and brew the pot of coffee.
Well, what if that weren't a problem?
Well, I don't know. It leaves somebody speechless.
Yeah. So what? In other words, this is just what I want you to consider. Okay.
Okay.
If that person weren't in there looking for things that are wrong, would it be a problem? What if you were diabetic? And you needed to have insulin on a regular basis. Would there be somebody in there saying, you know, there's no freedom here. You have to have these shots all the time. This is what's wrong. Or would you say, this is a physical condition, and, you know, the body needs this, and so I'm going to make sure the body has it. I'm not going to go on vacation and not take insulin, because that wouldn't be smart. I'm going to get really sick and maybe die.
Yeah.
And so what if somebody were there having the same kind of kind, patient, accepting, understanding orientation to this person who wants coffee? Would that in itself be freedom?
Well, I suppose it would be.
Yeah. So I would like you to explore that, if you would.
I will.
Because what I am concerned about is that your success with food is going to be taken over by conditioning and essentially used against you. if you can change your relationship with food, you should then change it with everything in your life. You should be all right with coffee or without coffee. But it doesn't, the same system doesn't say, you should be all right with a tidy house or a messy house. It says, no. You need a tidy house. True?
Yes, that same thinking does think that, yes.
So I'm going to ask you to look at all of the other places where this double standard is maintained. It's not okay for you to want, for this part of you to want coffee. Okay? It's not okay for this part of you to be casual about housekeeping.
Okay.
So I want you to be looking at who's deciding this? Who's calling the shots? Who's saying this is a problem, that's not a problem, you're okay if this, that's not okay, you're doing this, you shouldn't be doing that, you need to be this way. Who is that? Because it is my contention that that person is the lack of freedom.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that system is the lack of freedom, not whether or not somebody wants coffee. Now, the fact that somebody gets really miserable without coffee could be more the fact that she feels like nobody is on her side. If she's not fighting for this, she's not going to get to have it. So what might happen if you said to that part of you, I'm going to make sure you have coffee 3 times a day, every day. I'm committed to that. Would she relax? Would she calm down?
I don't know. I'll have to experiment.
There you go. That is the attitude of mind of liberation.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, I'm excited to bring kindness to Coffee Girl tomorrow.
That's right. Yep. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you might ask her what her name is. Not what somebody's calling her, but what she calls herself.
Oh. Okay.
Let us know.
Well, thank you for these mind-opening thoughts.
Thank you for being open to them.
You're so welcome.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Sherry. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Caroline. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have about 8 minutes left, and we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Xian Ma from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, this has been really instructive listening to the show tonight, because I called up with a really specific question. Actually, I guess I'm not sure where it's going from here, but in listening to the previous callers, it's like everything's turned upside down.
that is the ambition of Zen. Upside down and inside out whenever possible.
So I decided, I had the possibility while I've been sitting here waiting that some part's been wanting to come in and try and figure it out, but I recognize that that's a conditioned habit. So I have not, I've been letting it go, and so I'm just sitting here. the original intention was to call to follow up on a conversation that we'd had in group probably 2 months ago or so about a big piece of content where my version of your suggestion was to focus on coming back to center and just like drop the content for the moment or this process, because I'd gotten way, way, way identified.
Uh-huh.
And
In other words, for people who weren't there, that the content was so believable to someone that egocentric karmic conditioning was using that particular piece of content to put you in hell and keep you there.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And so
going from freedom into this extended, protracted period of hell.
Yeah. And so at a certain point, we have to say,
wait a minute, even if this were true, even if this were real, we've got to stop this. We've got to take a little time out, have a little break, regroup, relook at this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so that's actually what I've been doing.
Uh-huh.
And so I called back to report on that, and then I guess there's some part, which, you know, at this point, there's a part you're trying to figure out if it's conditioning or not, and it may or may not be, but about, well, you know, now what or what next. So there has been more of a coming back. There has been more of a coming back to center. There's been some seeing of some patterns without judgment. That it's been really in about this whole, and I mean, it almost seems as though, in some ways, there's been some interesting things developing practice-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing things like the from the last retreat, the practicing getting ticked off, and that's like this whole karmic thing is set up, pulling that way. I watched again a little bit later with another group this the way that. Conditioning was trying to basically get me into a place that would, down the line, enable it to say, well, look, nobody listens to you, because that's also a karmic pattern.
Yes. Now, this is really interesting, isn't it, to see something like that. So there's a karma that says, nobody listens to me. Nobody listens to me. Now, if I were just in neutral, I might never notice that. But if I have that karmic predisposition and I'm focused on that, I can find endless amounts of proof that that's the case. And I can also arrange situations in which that will apparently be true.
Yes, in which case, that's what I was watching, is that I had an opportunity to go to be listened to, and there was such a strong inner pull or conditioned pull to just say, oh, no, it's all right, and back out of it. But for some, I could see down the road that where it was going to come back to was not in that moment, but, you know,
oh, yeah,
the next day or whatever, or a week away, but see, this is just the way it is. Because, you know, you don't understand. I would have, like, shot myself in the foot, basically.
That's what conditioning is always working toward. So conditioning projects something out onto other people, onto life, onto the world, onto whatever is going on, and then looks for evidence that that's true. Interprets events in that way, and then says, see, I told you.
Or even convinces, if I'd fallen for it, it would have convinced me to behave in a way that would have created the story later down the line that would have reinforced the conditioning or the karma.
Exactly.
I mean, I would have done it to myself. It wouldn't even just be that other people are doing it to me. It's like would have.
Other people are never doing it.
Yeah, I would have done it to myself. I would have done it to myself. I mean, I would turn down this thing in order to create the karma, in order to reinforce the karma down the line that I wasn't being given this opportunity.
That's right. So even if you go out and you find people your life who don't listen to other people, and there you are. You're drawn to them like a magnet, okay? And you just, everything in you wants to be in relationship with these people who don't listen to other people. The fact that they don't listen to other people has nothing to do with you. But conditioning, your conditioning would say, see, they don't listen to me.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's not personal at all. It has nothing to do with you. They weren't listening to people before you came along. They're not going to listen to people after you're gone.
Yes.
Yeah. It's good to see, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very good to see.
This will be heartening to William. This is very good to see. Now, a lot of people would not perceive this as good news, but it is good news. It's freedom. It's liberation to see through what conditioning is doing to us.
Well, see, and then this goes back to what you just said to the previous caller, because I actually was calling up to say you suggested at some point in terms of this content that after taking a break or whatever in some number of months, that if I get back into this particular content, that I get a mentor. So I was actually calling for specific suggestions on that. And yet there was, when you said to the previous caller about, well, what happens if there wasn't, you know, it wasn't an issue? At least that's what I took out of it. And it's kind of like, because it does, Sherry, if it's an issue, which is kind of, I think, the state I called in some ways, I'm not sure, that there's a contraction around it. And when it's like the thing you've said sometimes about, well, what if there are no mistakes? And there's just a whole letting go that goes on with that.
Yes, the whole system just goes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I'm actually wondering, because I've got some medical stuff going on and have been I've got some stuff going on that the doctor is saying that it's interesting because there's been a lot more energy lately, and yet the doctor's been saying that that I'm basically doing adrenal fatigue. I've got this one hormone that's low that's indicative of adrenal fatigue, and so there's some wondering, it's kind of like, well, I'm wondering what may be going on that I'm not aware of, inwardly way below even what I've been talking about.
Well, now that's a trap, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, because, you know, people will be in relationship with conditioning and completely stressful and then looking for some deep hidden something that's going on in their lives that's causing the stress, rather than just being in this relationship with conditioning is really stressful.
Yeah,
it's not that I have to look back at, well, my relationship with my partner is like the one that I had with my father, and so it's the child in me. No.
Oh, no, I wasn't going there. I was just going to, that I'm, if I'm one, well, I guess even the question itself is a trap, because I was going to, well, it seems like, you know, there's definitely been, like, in the past years, more freedom since I started this practice than my whole life, right? So I was just really surprised to end up with this this hormonal result.
Uh-huh.
But I, yeah, so wondering if, well, if there's still some way that, well, there are definitely ways.
That's right. And
conditioning
so,
is still getting me, stressing me out, yes.
That's right. I would go with that. The question itself is an indication of the difficulty that you're running into.
Yes, trying to figure it out again.
Something wrong, not enough.
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Ah, all roads lead to home.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, something to work with, huh?
Yep.
Very good.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Xianma.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Xianma. Sherry, we have one more caller, and we've been given a couple of extra minutes.
Oh, marvelous.
Okay. I'd like to welcome Sarah from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Now, excuse me just a moment. You blipped out, Michael. Where is Sarah from?
San Jose.
San Jose. Good evening.
Hi, Sherry.
What's going on?
So I've been reading your book, Be the Person You Want to Find.
Uh-huh.
And I got to the part about egocentricity.
Uh-huh.
But I don't quite understand everything that you're talking about it, so I was wondering if I can get more of a clarification.
Yes. Now, I just want to encourage you in one thing at the outset. You will probably not understand what I'm saying for a really long time.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're talking about is experiences that tend to come with practice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? And so we you know, a lot of times there's an image of an onion, and we're peeling layers off of an onion.
Okay.
And so, we start out, we look at the onion, and we want to imagine what the onion looks like at its innermost center.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't know until we peel all those layers off.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I just want to encourage you that understand understanding it is actually not valuable.
Okay.
Practicing is.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that as a background, what do you want to know?
So how would you go about to practice it then? Like,
okay.
More specifically.
All right. So you're in San Jose. Now, you know we have a Zen center in Palo Alto.
Oh, uh-huh.
And there they meditate on a regular basis. They have people who will teach you to meditate, and you can go there and meditate, and then they'll have group discussions afterwards, and you can actually bring up all your questions. You know, well, I'm seeing this, or I've noticed these voices are talking about this, or what happens when this, or I get really distracted, or I've been practicing counting from 1 to 10, but I can't get past 1,
uh-huh.
Okay? And it's an opportunity to talk about what's going on with you in your practice, which is really helpful as compared to wanting to have some sort of, you know, great understanding of Zen awareness practice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because there's an image that's used in Zen. You know, if you go out in a pouring rain, you'll get soaked within a few minutes.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But if you go out in a mist, so you go up to San Francisco and the fog rolls in, and it's misty, it's not raining, it's just a light mist. You can hardly really, you barely feel it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you walk around in it for a few hours, it'll just penetrate right through all of your clothing and right down to your skin.
Yeah.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
That's what Zen awareness practice is like.
Uh-huh.
It's not a downpour. It's a slow misting.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Yeah. And so practice, practice, practice. Now, okay. Also, you're very close to the monastery.
Yeah.
Yeah? So you can get on the website, that Living Compassion website, find out what's going on, call the monastery. You know, you can come up just for a Sunday if you want to,
mm-hmm.
and come meditate with us and participate in group. There's an orientation. People teach you how to meditate. So the main thing is to spend as much time as you can in the presence of other people who are practicing. It's the very best you can do for yourself.
Okay.
All right? And keep in touch.
Okay.
There's this great radio show called Open Air,
mm-hmm.
And you can listen to that on a weekly basis and then call in when you like, and we'll do this together.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us, Sarah. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Another great show, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it myself.
All right. Talk to you soon, then.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Good night.